Blog Talk Radio.
Goodness. Hello, everyone. Hello and welcome. You found us. Masonic Effects, it has that influence, doesn't it? We're just finishing up a little note about a little reminder of today's program. And I have this notion that we have something quite remarkable going on here in Ontario. If we choose to find and appreciate the essence of what's happening around. Now, I know this might not find favor with urbanites, but there is something tremendous, something significant to be said for a nation where we can still experience the effect of early days. It is not the same. Everything changes. We know that. And progress has accommodated people and the means of their industry, ways for the people to make a living, and all of the attributes of modern life, legal structure, health structure. We've employed the sciences. We've also established a careful system of banking to create stability. The main goal now, it's become imbalanced by ideologues, but even that is moving. Nothing remains the same. So if you're thinking that, you know, all the nation status that we see today is going to remain, well, some of it is already showing fault lines. It depends on the eye of the beholder. But it's like somebody trying to sell a product. They will not necessarily point out the negatives or the shortcomings. They're going to try and embellish and try and help you to become very confident in whatever, in your purchase, so that they'll sell you satisfaction before they'll actually sell you the product. Oh, while we think that the world is bombarding us with all these clever ideas and ways of attracting our attention and that aren't necessarily in our best interest, we mustn't lose track of the fact that there are so many elders around that look at our dilemma and wonder whether we've just lost our minds. If you want to do nothing but sit in front of the boob tube for hours on end, or a blue screen for hours on end, what do you expect? What do you expect? It's going to be like, you know, just this constant trickle. Don't you think your mind will, after a while, become a little bit soft or a little numb? Well, I've been one of those people that have imagined what our communities could be like if our media was had a science focus, a learning focus, a philosophical focus even. What if the steady trickle was something uplifting, something that was positive to the human condition? What if it was not dominated by you know, mindless advertising, you know, always looking for the sale? What if? Well, that day is coming. That day is coming. More and more controls, you know, as we get more controls, we are using it and we're tuning out. And that doesn't mean everybody's tuning out. There are some people who are just, you know, for whatever reason, they will be stuck. That's always been the case. Not everybody is. We're not in a machine. We don't live in a machine. We go our separate ways. We go have our separate issues. Some of us are easier to sway and influence than others. That's always been the case. Always. We're on the, and we have access. Now, what that will do, I don't know. The media will, as it does, sensationalize. It goes right after a salacious article. You and I know that. You remember the dignity that occurred, not that it wasn't fraught. Some of us were taught that we didn't talk about the dead in derogatory terms, that when there was an accident, we didn't stand there and gawk. We were of a more stoic type of culture. And that is where I am. That is still quite prevalent. Although the media won't let you know that, they'll stick a microphone in the face of somebody that doesn't know any better. Again, that's not defining us, though. Those are people that are going through this amazing, amazing adjustment. This country where I am is an emerging culture, and it is attempting inclusiveness that many other nations have given up on. I particularly like it because it seems so parallel to what our thinking is in Masonry. Yeah, we're going through some pretty serious adjustments, and I suppose there are people that would have been predicting this. I know that there are writers. If we look deep enough for it, we will find the works of people that were deducing from what they saw that there would be a time when trust in the estates would be eroding, and yet there would be this continuous effort to maintain some semblance of order. We're now further down the road. We can see and calculate and have the actual costs. So it's not just conceptual. We can show the costs of inefficient thinking, of weak thinking, of ideologies. Now, what does that do? Well, here, those ideas don't go away. They may take a lifetime to have effect, but they do. It's as much as people might want us to think that we can, you know, we can do nothing, and this is the way the system is. We are the system. We are. And our aspirations and our drives shape that. We have a sense here of optimism, and we know how to enjoy ourselves in big groups. We have big. Our entertainment is wonderful, and it happens a lot. It happens a lot. It's frequent, and it helps to pull. It's pulling us together. We have so many people coming to our shores, and they're not sure what they read, but they're not sure of the experience as they walk down the street. How long does it take them before they jump into a canoe or walk through the woods? How long does it take? And what do you think happens? You've sat next to these great bodies of fresh water. They're, if you've not seen anything like it, it's a staggering effect. Or when you are in the foothills looking up at the Rocky Mountains, some of the highest huge mountain range in the world. You know, well, does it matter? It doesn't matter. What matters is that it's humbling and it's beautiful. The sounds, it's a sensory overload. And you sit down next to the oceans and the smell of the oceans and the roar. It's compelling. And then you find that there are versions of us that are just quite the interesting. We have some, and you experience that as you do. So where I am, what are we, 7 different time zones, and you know, you can about 7,500 kilometers from one place to one side to the next. It's an experience. You know, I started this rant talking about the experience that we can still have here and where I am. I'm in part of the most populated area in the entire country. But within minutes, we can drive from the core of a city and be out into beautiful, wide open landscapes and fields and air. And you can look up and see sunshine. And there's a firmness about it. We aren't shy about country here. We like country and we like the people that live there. And is their life simpler than city? Yes, of course, in many ways. But simplistic? Hell no, it's hard, especially if you're a grower or a farmer. You have to really be sharp, but it's all there. It's all there. The variety is still there, and we can learn. Now, I think there's something to be said here, and today we're going to you're going to find that I think I've stumbled into, again, as I tend to, stumbled into a writer that is just amazing. It's the fellow that's been the conspiracy theorists want us to believe is the real William Shakespeare. That's Kit Marlowe, Christopher Marlowe. Good writer, even a fantastic 16th century kind of guy too. With that kind of dexterity, that of judgment, of sight, it's like my art teacher, lovely man, Bill, told me not to paint with my eye. You know what I'm doing is I have to paint with my eye, not with what my brain interprets. And it took a while to understand it, but it's like a joy. It's a newness. Instead of translating, think about what's coming in. Yeah, I know it all ends up the back of our brain. Yes, of course. What I'm suggesting is that there's a poet in each one of us. That attention to detail. It's important because it helps us to understand and appreciate the world around us. So this day, whether you're in the city or out in country, when you're on your walk, you might think about this conversation. And if it's a bracing March wind that's cutting through, it tends to, I hope you've dressed for it, and you'll be that much more appreciative of a little bit of warmth, or that tug that scarf up a little higher around your collar. When you think about the smell, you think about the sound and the different colors and the light playing around you. Remember that you're part of that. You're part of that, and so were the very first people that walked that path with you, before you. Now, tell me, that wasn't that long ago, was it? That wasn't 5,000 years of history. We're not looking at the pyramids here or Stonehenge or some of the other henge. We are in the forest. Things grow, trees grow, they fall over in the storms, and then new growth happens. And so that's happening in my very awkward and meandering way. That's happening in the order, in the craft around me. And it's wonderful. And yeah, so, we're not happy with the trees falling. And there's some that would say, well, we need to harvest this properly and keep on top of it. And then there's this natural kind of, I don't know whether it's, I don't think it's mess. I think it's a natural order of things. And it's happening around us. One door is closing, another is opening. It's a tremendous time to be part of this Masonic experience. I suppose some could say it's a bit choppy. The waters are a bit choppy, or there's, we have storms to navigate. But my goodness, if you sailed, that's the what makes it all worthwhile. Just that the challenge, and knowing that you don't necessarily know the outcome yourself. All these great, fantastic powers around. We'll tune into a little bit of that acuity from Kit Marlowe today. But the music, how do we assault, if you don't mind, let us here assault your senses with some music that is deliberately intended to set our mind at ease, and mine as well, This is from some work by Paul Desmond, one of our frequent flyers here on Masonic Effects. Sit back, relax, and share a little bit of time with us, wherever you are on the planet, whether that's at Turkey or Brazil or New Zealand. I should always say shout out to New Zealand and China and Japan. Thanks for tuning. Oh, it's a good start, eh? I think. Good start to the show. Here's a commentary for you. Part of a conversation starter. Change in a time of change, I called it. Robert Heinlein. Robert Heinlein wrote about isolation in his work, Stranger in a Strange Land. If you don't care for science fiction, then skip this part. Like all writers of good science fiction, he helped humanity look at itself from a safe distance. Sort of like Stanislaw Lem, for any of you who are fans. Distance is important, especially when we're talking about the intimacy of the human condition, guilt, passion, pain, the idiosyncrasies of life. And these many years later, I am reminded, while physics is rethinking physics, thanks to the Webb telescope sending us pictures of galaxies that ought not to exist, but do, the existence as awareness teaches also that terribly challenging thing called intimacy. What part does this play in masonry? I think it's like this. Today, we are largely viewing mentoring as an objective phenomena. But we also know lecturing is one-sided, so we have to question our own understanding. The properties that have drawn men to masonry for 600 years are not the large brushstrokes, I think, but the intimate discussion. Masonry has taken itself on legendary proportions. So legend mixed with factual history is of a little concern. except for a certain portion of brethren who need that reality check for consistency. It isn't what we do, it's what we take away from those experiences. What reminds us of the unique perspective Masonry brings to the world? I think of Masonry as a recital. Unlike friends, music never lets you down. If you are of that inclination, then what I say next will make some sense. You have to tell yourself you can do it. With enough effort and dedication, you can achieve the divine within Masonry. I cannot tell you what that is, because it is yours to discover. I cannot eat your meal for you. But you already knew that. We introduce children to good music in hopes they will enjoy it as much as you and me. We teach children values because we hope to give them the tools to a good life. If one becomes a Mason, he is showing dedication. Dedication. We change. We're in a constant state of change in an environment that is constantly in motion around us, on a planet that is constantly chasing this, our star, through this great, great cosmos. Now, what if there was no beginning to all of this? That it's always been there. That, wow. Thank you, James Webb Telescope. Thank you, Masonry. That being the case, if we've always been there, then it would, in a way, the values of Masonry have been percolating along for a great long time. Aren't we fortunate? You're Duke Ellington, Brother Duke Ellington, as a matter of fact. This is from a recording he did on my wife's birthday. 1963. She was a little older than that, mind you, January 22nd. It's called The Single Petal of a Rose. It's just... Now's the era of cars with big fins and, you know, tons of steel hurling down the road, at least in North America. Jeez. Here. Do you mind if we pull your chair a little closer to the table? I want to share something that I've discovered that I think is kind of cool. If you're of my vintage, I would say it's groovy. But it's kind of cool. You know, earlier in my commentary, we're talking about the walk, you know, and I'm thinking here now about some quite legitimate science that's come out. It's talked about that explains to us some of this sense of goodwill and good feeling that we have when we're around trees. And although the press will mock tree huggers, there's a whole other group of people that aren't so bold and brassy, and they're sick, and they're ill, and they're aware, and they find that the contact with a tree, it changes them and heals them, and it's quite legitimate. So if your world is so full of richness and that you don't need it, well, by all means, you know. But there's something that goes on that we may not, and it happens. It's like, you know, the laws of science go on around us, whether we're aware of them or not. Better that we are, I think. But you don't need somebody else to talk to you about the pleasantness. Or if you've ever drifted in a canoe down a stream, and it's just so silent, and you can creep up, and even the birds aren't disturbed by you. You know that feeling. Or you brush through the lily pads, and you know the feeling that I'm talking about. This is a magical potion. This is the magic. This is the potion that is poetry. We call it poetry. It's when writers connect observation and metaphysics, and they make that connection for us, the seen world and the unseen world. And, you know, we are, masonry really gained a granularity at a time when the romantic poets were feasting. And that was, you think about it, the very first time people were writing about emotion. Now it's like, well, write about it if you want. But imagine a time when that had not been done. Imagine. It's hard to. It was the emotion, all of the sticky, syrupy sort of romance stuff? No. It was bold and... You know, do you think the poetry of the Iliad is somehow simplistic, or do you actually look at that in a demeaning or derogatory way? I can't imagine. Poetry is important because it helps us understand, and that's not a bad thing. But it does it without force feeding. You know, always that issue about control. Am I in control? Well, no, but keep the illusion going as long as you can. That's what, you know, turns your crank. If that what makes you happy, then by all means, you're in control. The rest of us seem, we're along for the ride. The fates are at play. It's like the old argument, you know, the old discussion. Or do you have free will? Or are our decisions derivative of what we know and what we see of values? You know, which is it? Can't do both. Poetry has a strength all its own, and it lies in an ability to shed a sort of a sideways look at the world. You know, and you see, of course, you see the woods, you see the shadows, or you see the brightness, the contrast, and you feel the moss under your feet. But there's something else going on. And if you have a mind to look for it, which do you want to do? Do you think about your potential to walk through these experiences with a deeper appreciation? Is that something that you deserve or you want for yourself? What will you find? Well, I have no idea. That's something that's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? But is it worthwhile? Well, the value here, it's up to you to decide. Poetry teaches us how to live. It's like cleaning off a grubby car window. It shows the vulnerabilities of human beings so we can relate to each other a little better. You know how, I love poetry and I'm an advocate for it, I think. But it's important because it's an anecdote for all of the ugliness and chaos and violence that you see on your television every day, that meanness, you know, that ruthlessness, that illegality that we see, and those are our heroes. You know, we can justify the illegitimacy of them because they're our heroes. I don't like to be manipulated like that anymore. It's a bridge. Poetry, it's a bridge. It's not about tearing the world down and tearing us apart, but building and creating and seeing something in common interests. Right? And it helps us realize that we're not as different as we think. So and I think me, if I'm looking in your... I can tell a lot about you by looking into your library. Yep. Oh yeah, you know, it's not just the library that's built for effect. It's like, you know, with books that haven't been opened. It's like, what chapters are well thumbed? And are you a fellow that will go back and read something a second, a third, a fourth time? Because each time you are learning something more. Me? Me and Thomas Hardy had that relationship for a while. Yes, we've all, I know. So you read this, it's about the greater good. Here, but enough. Christopher Marlowe is very, very interesting. I think a very, very interesting man. This is the guy that was born in 1564. Yeah. And he was an Elizabethan poet, and he was just out before Shakespeare in terms of drama. Eh? And we know a little bit about him. His dad was John Marlowe, a Canterbury shoemaker. And we don't know, of course, a long time ago, who's this guy. But he did obtain an arts degree at Cambridge at 1584. As if it matters. And he stayed on in residence there. And he was intending to take Anglican orders. However, the university hesitated about granting him his master's. He was frequently away from the school, and they weren't quite sure whether he was the caliber, you know. But all those doubts passed by when the Privy Council sent a letter declaring that he had been employed on matters touching the benefit of his country, apparently in Elizabeth I's secret service. Yeah, that gets attention. You know, he was smart. He was a smart fella. So he was getting in and out of trouble with the authorities because he was a bit disreputable, and he could get it. He didn't mind a punch up. But he was in government service, so he's a rough and robust kind of guy. And he gained a reputation for atheism. Oh, my goodness. You know, you see all this crap and you say, you know, sometimes I have to question. Yeah. But that was of the day, raising the questions. You didn't mean necessarily that you're going to be executed. But he ended a dodgy kind of life. He was killed by Ingram Fraser. He was hanging around with a bad lot. A fight broke out over a bill. Yep. And that was the end of this writer. Here, I'm going to read for you a sonnet. This is, I think, a lovely, lovely sonnet. His 73rd. And you know I'm just such a sucker for a sonnet, but see if you feel it. See, here's the I give you a bit of an analysis of this, and then see as it read through the lines whether it comes that way to you or another way. This is a speaker again, and he's invoking a series of metaphors to characterize the nature of what he perceives to be his old age. Well, this is so prophetic from so many angles for me right now, with the passing of my father a few days ago and me still here next in line. The writer talks about how the best parts of his age, like the best time of year. And there's no foolishness here. His best time, the writer says, it's autumn. Well, that's mine because I was born then. and I've always enjoyed the autumn, that change. And he talks about the leaves, and then he talks about it after sunset fadeth in the west, and the remaining light is slowly extinguished in the darkness. You see that when you're out in the woods and you're camping and you're around a campfire, and the light gradually fades. And then he talks about death. It's part of what goes on. Yeah. Yep. The trees don't live forever, and neither do I. And then the excitement comes to an end and things are extinguished in ashes. And then he talks about strengthening his knowledge. So see what you think. See how it affects you here. And if the message to you is about aging, that time of year thou mayst in me behold, when yellow leaves or none or few do hang upon those boughs which shake against the cold, bare ruined choirs where late the sweet birds sang, in me thou seest the twilight of such day, as after sunset fadeth in the west, which by and by black night doth take away, death's second self that seals up all in rest. In me thou seest the glowing of such fire that on the ashes of his youth doth lie, in it as the deathbed whereon it must expire, consumed with that which is nourished by this thou perceivest, which makes thy love more strong. To love that well which thou must leave ere long, which you leave behind. Is that the closeness that you're hoping for in when your time is, when you reach that state of mind? Is the closeness that you're looking for? Or did you experience? Well, I hope so. I hope you have those cozy moments with your own history, your own mortality. I think that'll do. Yeah, that's suitable for this audience. You know, once we make start to think about the point of masonry globally, I think it's liberating to see not so much the conflict and tension, but the differences, the different ways that different cultures have approached that that task, that aim. And it's delightfully varied. It's like our landscape and our languages and our foods, our cultures are different. So I think it's quite interesting. Of course, the notion that this is one, you know, uniformity around the world, well, I'm not a big fan of that kind of thinking. I think more talking more about, you know, the spiritual essence of masonry. And today's walk through history talks to us about about the work, the aspects of some quite prominent intellectuals in France. Not that there weren't any in anywhere else, but that's not the point I'm making here today. This is just a recognition that they're wrestling with the thing that makes us fools, that here we are attempting to find that all nations, there's a single family in all nations. There's something similar in every human being. And the world stacks up a lot of evidence to show us how wrong we are, how futile that thought is. We're ridiculous. And yet, here we are, hundreds of years later, with this notion. Is it a hope or an aspiration? It's audacious, yeah. But it's hope. It's at the end of all of the evidence that is provided for me in a given day about how ugly and intemperate the world is. This is the counterbalance. This is saying, yeah, bring it, bring all of that evidence, but it's not powerful enough to put us off this, what we believe it to be true. And is that factual? Well, we can go out, if we have that mindset to go out and find the facts that prove our thesis, we it would be interesting. Eh? I won't say we'll find it. I would like to sit in the room with great orators like you and listen to the debate about it. Is it prevalent? Only the spirit of masonry operates in this astonishing revolution. And speaking in the 1780s, the French orator who sought this universal human community then went on to make the historically interesting observation. Given the events of 1789, you know, revolt and all the nastiness and beyond, that although the laws of masonry may do little to promote man's happiness in the political state, they do add to his virtue and happiness in the social state. The laws of masonry. This sublime school creates the good father, the good son, the good citizen, the good friend. The Grand Lodge of France is invoked as the true Masonic government. The orator admits that there are troubles in some lodges. Equality should be measured less by the differences in conditions and more by the principles of education, of sentiment, and social grace. We are reminded of one of the earliest French orations given by the Chevalier Ramsay in the late 1730s and widely distributed. Listen, we seek to form in the course of time a spiritual nation. It is as if the social has become an essentially political experience, or at least the only sphere wherein it seems possible to negotiate the disparities of power between men. Speaking also in the politically troubled 1780s, Dutch Freemasons became more aggressive in asserting the order as a happy and flourishing republic. One Masonic thinker, also a major writer and intellectual of the century, spoke with a unique and insightful voice about the political meaning of the Masonic search for private harmony and equality. Gotthold Lessing lived in the state-sponsored Enlightenment promoted by Frederick the Great in Prussia. Freemasonry played a distinctive role in that setting, in aiding and abetting the cult of monarchy. But Lessing wanted more from the lodges. Indeed, Lessing, the philosophy, wanted more than humankind than he found in the Moors of the time. In early 1748, he was frequenting lodges in Berlin, and his Masonic initiation appears to have been in 1751. By the 1770s, German Freemasonry was in considerable turmoil, with reformers such as the Count Zinzendorf demanding that the lodges express an almost utopian search for perfection. In an anonymous dialogue written precisely in the 1770s, Lessing drew out the ethical implications of Masonic secularism. If we know the Freemason by his deeds, he argued, then he must leave his mark in the world. From the world, Lessing reasons immediately to the state. Do men exist to further the happiness of the state, or should the reverse not be the case? Indeed, the happiness of all its members is the happiness of the state. The state that subordinates the happiness of its people to its own interests possess all the attributes of tyranny. The listener to these sentiments in the dialogue quickly responds, "You must not say that so loudly." But the Masonic speaker is unrelenting. Only in civil life, through political institutions, do men find the formula for happiness. His listeners remind him, however, that human beings are hopelessly divided into many states and religions. Predictably, the Masonic voice has the cure. Freemasonry will unite humankind. Its universalism offers the first step toward unity. This was an uncharacteristically radical Masonic text, but one that could not have gone unnoticed, if for no other reason than its resonance with arguments that were being put forward at the moment in the rebellious American colonies. Some programs, some shows seem shorter than others, like we tear into it. Maybe we're not so foolish thinking that there is, through us and through our simple ways, a means to unite the world, to remind people that we do have a great deal in common. And to do it from a platform of virtue, things that are recognizable by other cultures and other people. It's understated. But we will, what we face where I am, one of the more troubling aspects of Masonry is this sense of impatience. We need to do things immediately. We need to find the short-term flavor of the day. And we've been doing this for a very, very long time. And it's our tastes are changing faster than, and our appetite continues to grow. And the solution, well, we seem to have lost track about what it is we're trying to solve. We're just going through the motions. It works like this, you know, a reminder about the sense of these broader spiritual sense. Well, that's part of Masonry too. Roll your eyes. Yes, I do too. But we have, there's something interesting about being known for as a unifying element. Not owning you, not controlling you, not forming a chain of command over all. Finding that intrinsic link, that connection between us all. And we find it in our dreams and in our hopes. And, you know, we've been through the ritual. We find it. Now, that does not mean that we are less or that we should abandon our strengths. Just no. We continue on. And we continue and remain, though we may be a few right now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. We're I think, distilling the best. It's a lengthy process, and it's not always happiness, but it's necessary. It's necessary. And we are... I'm finding more, proportionally, more knowledgeable and well-equipped Masons. And to the delight that they have different tastes and different interests and different strengths in Masonry. Thank goodness for that, huh? In other words, the real people. Now, we are, like as ever, learning how to see the bigger picture and feel comfortable and stay connected with each other. That's a lesson that renews every time we take in a new member to the lodge. The chemistry of the group changes, and we do too. I hope that we can pick this conversation up, or if I'm walking past in the tavern and I hear you and your mates at it, I wouldn't kill you to invite me to sit in. And yes, if you do that, I'll buy the round. And just listen. I'm just curious about where your thinking will take you. Take the conversation. It's been interesting, and I'm grateful that you've decided to assist in this project, this type of conversation, with an international audience. I'm grateful. I'll let you go now. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness wherever you are, random. And if you can, do it with your invisibility cloak. Don't bring attention to yourself. If you want to do something that's really quite interesting, in a world where we don't do very much without wanting our picture, you know, people seem to want a picture of my breakfast. I can't not imagine that, but it's true. a grown man wanting my, to, you don't want to know what I, but we want acknowledgement. We're raised that way. You know, gregarious is best, a big group is best, and everything comes with an acknowledgement. And if you don't get that, something's wrong. And here we come, this small, crazy talk. Do these things for other people, for the intrinsic sense, you know, the experience that you will have. But if you really want to sweeten it, if you're doing that, you're volunteering, you're helping out, that's the act of Masonic kindness. But if you have the capability to do it without drawing attention to yourself, anonymously, then I'd like you to, I'd love to talk with you. I know we may never meet, but I would love to talk with you about that experience. Suffice it to say, in my humble experience, it's worth a try. Talk to you soon. Thanks, folks.